Okay, a good devoir. So we will resume Chovis Halvavos. Sha'a Cheshbon HaNefesh, Perek Gimel. We will start Cheshbon Ha'alba Asa, number 14. And that is as follows. Cheshbon Adam Nafshe is actually going to introduce to us one of the powerful means of Avas Hashem, of connecting with Avas Hashem, love of Hashem. In general, it's a challenge because it's hard to connect to something that, to love something abstract. But let's see. A person should contemplate the way you feel, the positive feelings that you feel toward anyone who you sense loves you. Meaning, we'll just talk about this in very simple, superficial terms. To have a 10th grade high school girl who is suddenly told by a friend or something, you know, that this teacher, Mrs. whatever her name is, she's been telling girls that she really likes you. Okay. All of a sudden, this girl might have felt very powerful toward her, but all of a sudden, she likes that teacher. We like people who like us. In fact, we admire people who like us. And the Chovis HaLevavos is saying, focus on this a bit. If you know that somebody looks at you with fondness, with love, you're going to feel similar feelings. Like the pasuk says, "Kamayim hapanim lapanim, kein lev ha'adam la'adam," that people's hearts reflect each other, just like water reflects the image. So if I know that somebody else loves me, I'm going to feel love for them. Now, the kol shekein yia ish ahu sarei nefesh, but it goes even further. Let's say it's not just another person. Let me give the example of a teacher. It's like that also with friends. Now, if you start hearing that this and this person really likes you, really admires you, you're going to feel fondness toward that person. When it's a teacher, it might even be more because there's an element of someone from above me is expressing that attention and that love for me. And if you'd be talking about somebody even higher, let's say, okay, you're part of a very large company, and you hear that the boss, not your immediate supervisor, but the divorce has been asking about it and saying that she really appreciates your work and that she really likes you, etc. You're going to feel loyalty toward that boss, and you're going to like her too. So imagine if we actually live in an area with a king, and you started getting messages that the king has been taking note of you and has told a few people that he really likes you. Okay. So, yes, you're going to start feeling admiration and fondness toward the king. And it would be even, so I guess in our times where we didn't really grow up with the reality of a king. But let's talk in terms of a big company with a very influential boss on top. Okay, so yeah, it's a mundaning the mashal a bit, but we'll use it that way. So the yosem is a kishigirim imenu ois alze mehakovaser. Certainly, when besides just hearing that that person likes you, you would actually see different things happening. Like let's say you get a message. She decided she's upping your hourly rate. The boss decided she's upping your hourly rate. And not just that, but you suddenly get notice from the supervisor of your department that she wants you to have a car with a driver. Okay, it's not a bad thing. So when you start seeing different signs Then, a little bit later, you get a message that there's going to be a very important executive lunch. She'd like you to be there. So when you start, you hear about that this boss likes you, and then you start getting signs of she's trying to move you up in the company and throwing in various benefits and perks. So, when you start hearing that this person is benefiting you and doing different things for you, even though they don't really need you. So you're really going to, it's going to become a whole pursuit, admiration for this person. I don't know how much that'll work in the case of a boss, but you can certainly see this in social circles. You can certainly, and certainly if we'd be talking about a reality of the king, that when I realize, if you talk about Lahavdil, if there's a Rebbe or a Rosh Yeshiva or something like that, that the student will really start becoming very dedicated toward that Rebbe.
And they give you all these great perks, a car, a driver, this and a that. And then a few months later, they take the car away. And then they take the driver away. And then they take the this, and then they lower your salary. How are you supposed to feel towards that boss? They gave you a lot of gifts, but then they took them away. So do you think they still like you? How are you supposed to feel?
Okay. Let's pin that question up and get back to it. I would like to make our way through the circle properly and circle back to it properly.
I have a granddaughter who's been in the same place for 25 years, and she was offered terms 10 times as much as she was making here. And so, of course, she got the baby because she got so much more, she's getting so much more money and much better tenure with her. Anyway, he met all the demands that she was going to get over there because he didn't want her to leave.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Okay. So, well. So, before we start with that question, let's just focus on this reality, right? When a person is in such a state, they will give all of themselves. They will be giving all of themselves to try to dedicate themselves to this person, both in terms of the commands, mitzvot va'avodos, meaning the things that they actually ask you to do, you're certainly going to do with all of your efforts. But besides that, avodos means in general. I'm not just going to be following instructions, I'm seeing what else can I do to further this person's interests. And you'll actually be ready to spend the money on that person, and you'll involve your family in trying to show that reciprocity. Now, and if we can understand that we would do this to a frail person like us, how much more are we obligated in that sense toward our Creator? That the Navi came with a message. We got that feedback from Hashem. A Navi came to us and said, Hashem has his eye on you. He's actually said to each of us individually and really likes you and finds your service of him to be particularly appealing. Person is told this in a very individual, unique way. Like the Pasuk says, Hashem tells us, you know why I chose you, Klal Yisrael? Not because you are, usually you would think, you go for the biggest nations that gives a king prestige. Hashem says, I chose you not because of your great numbers. You aren't of the greatest numbers among the nations of the world, but simply because of my love for you. Meaning, this is not about numbers. This is something personal, so to speak. Okay? And besides the fact that we were told this by the Navi, we constantly see him showing us these signs of his love, of his aid to us. Chadashim gam yishanim. We see this in our generation now, and it's really just adding to a whole pattern going throughout all the generations. This is a pattern that has been existent all throughout the generations. As it says in the Pasuk, Avgam, even when we'll be in the land of our enemies, Hashem will still be maintaining us. Other such Pasukim. Okay. So the point is that we get that we, if we should spend a little time trying to contemplate this in human terms. And then when we do, this is actually one of the powerful means of connecting to Avas Hashem. It's the knowledge of how much Hashem loves us. So now we have your question in the background. We'll get to it, but we can only get to it after we first establish very well this basis, this understanding. And the truth is that this is okay, we're coming away from Shavuos now. We're still actually within the zone of Shavuos. For a week after Shavuos, we don't say Tachnun because the Shavuos Karbanos can still be made up in these days. There's still the effect of Shavuos is still there from a spiritual and halachic perspective. But to a large extent, that actually is the experience of Shavuos, the experience of being shown. I'm not sure what we mentioned before Shavuos and what we didn't, but I mentioned about the picture that I was shown from outer space, planet Earth. No, I was shown a picture. Someone showed me a picture. You've probably seen it. I think it's a famous picture that was taken from the Apollo, whatever it's called, that from the farthest point from Earth that they were able to take a picture from. And they took a picture of Earth. And you have to be shown, like you have to be explained. Otherwise, you don't know what you're seeing in the picture. But what you see in the picture is you see a large ray of light. I guess. They were like the sun was behind them. You see a large ray of light going down the picture, and then it is in the middle of the picture. Whoever's showing you the picture has to point it out to you.
Dot.
But so, yes, that's
Blue
right.
dot
You're
that's
showing me a
here.
blue dot. You've seen that? You've seen that? A blue dot in the middle of this ray. They said, that's planet Earth. A blue dot in the middle of the ray. Not Beit Shemesh. Yes, that's planet Earth. Look, planet Earth. Now, you can't, even with your fingernail, you can't like split it apart in such a way that you'd be able to say this is Beit Shemesh. If you were to split it with your fingernail, you'd have a continent, right? So that blue dot is Earth. And basically, if a Malach were to ask Hashem, what is your title? How do you present yourself? Say the God of the entire universe, but Hashem doesn't say that. He tells the Malach here, come here, look through this microscope. We see that blue dot there. Okay, now on the blue dot, try to zoom in a little more. You can barely see it. We have to turn up the microscope, right? Turn up the microscope. On that blue dot, there's a tiny little sliver there called Eretz Yisrael. It's a fraction of that blue dot. Now here, turn it up more. You see those people there? People, they're smaller than bacteria. Right? You see those people there? You want to know who I am? And this is Hashem with billions of malachim who are bigger than the universe, right? Standing and saying his shiur. He says, you want to know who I am? You see there? I am their God. I'm that person's God. This is how Hashem said, this is the title that he chooses. Even he goes by, he's known as Elokei HaShamayim, Elokei HaAretz, etc. But what he chooses to say is, I am Elokei Yisrael. That is the title he presents himself by because that is what brings him most joy and pride. And this is what we mean when we say when Hashem tells us, Atem Tiyulim Amleches Kayanim V'Goy Kodesh, Hashem says, you are going to be for me a kingdom of Malach, a kingdom of Kaihana, a kingdom of priests, meaning a kingdom of people in the service. So the Mefarshim say that what Hashem was signifying was Klal Yisrael was standing there at Har Sinai. And when they saw the heavens open up, we don't feel like a speck of a blue speck, because when I look around, just Beit Shemesh seems pretty big. But when they saw all that open up, they saw how immense it was what they were dealing with. They felt that. They actually experienced being a microbacteria, meaning the type of bacteria that bacteria need microscopes for.
Bnei
Yisrael, we did. We did. That relative to what was going on. And that's why Kali was so awed that they couldn't handle it, right? They couldn't handle it. Kali said they died. Hashem had to bring them back to life in order to be able to contain what they were seeing. And Hashem tells them, hey, you see all these malachim, the myriads of malachim that are surrounding my whole entourage? What I'm proposing to you is I'm going to move them out of the way and bring you in as my closest circle. Atem tiyulim mamleches kehanim, meaning right now, my kehanim are the meshoresei elyon, the malachi ashores, who are surrounding me. And you look at them and you just feel like shrinking into nothing, but you're going to be replacing them as my immediate circle. This is the message that Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael. Attempt to leave some weeks ago, me call Amin Kili, call Aretz. I own it all, but you are going to be my treasured circle. So, this is the message that Hashem is giving. And we came away from there in total awe. And in fact, right, that's we mentioned the question of why did Hashem hover the mountain over them if they said Nasa v'nishma. So, Tosfos, many answers given to this, but Tosfos' answer is that once they saw that, they said Nasa v'nishma when they got the proposal from Hashem. But Tosfos says that once they saw the immensity of it, they might have said, we can't do this. We can't do this. It's too much, right? We're only tiny, tiny human beings. And here Hashem said, no, there's no choice. I'll give you the koyach, but there's no choice. You're in this. You're in this and you can do it. In fact, I think I said it here, I'm not sure if I said it here, but the Sfas says that the pasuk following Kriyas Kabbalah Soter, it says that the Jewish people were so fearful of what they were seeing, that they asked Moshe, you step in. So Hashem tells them a pasuk, a little bit of a riddle. The pasuk says like this: Moshe told them, Al tiro. Hashem tells them, don't fear. Because I'm Hashem did this in order to raise you up, and so that his fear should be on your faces all of your days, and you won't sin. So if you put together the two parts of the pasuk, he's saying, don't fear, because the purpose was that he wants you to fear him. So don't be afraid. Like it seems to be a contradiction in terms of the pasuk. The end of the pasuk is contradicting the first one, the beginning. Don't fear, because the purpose was that you should fear him, so don't worry about it. What's being said here? So the Sfas Emes says that what Moshe was saying was as follows: you're feeling like this is too awesome, too overwhelming. Great, that was exactly the point. Hashem wanted you to understand quite how immense it is. But now that you did, go forward with confidence. Now that you did, go forward with confidence. So part of the awe is in the very fact that once we understood who Hashem is, the very fact that he wants to relate to us is itself totally overwhelming. And the way the Chovas HaLevavos says in Shavuot HaSadikim is that when we talk about gratitude to Hashem, any gratitude that we have for something that he did for us is compounded by the very fact that he's interested in associating with us b'chol. It comes back to the mashal we started with. If a friend does something for you, that's very nice. You should be grateful. But let's say it's someone who did something to you that there was no reason they should even look at you. Right? They're so on high, no reason they should even look at you. Right? If you have multimillionaires, they share an office building in somewhere I don't know where, very famous office building in Manhattan, and when one needs help, the other helps him out with a $50 million loan because he needs to make a quick deal and he's short on the funds for 2 weeks. So they help each other out. It's very nice, right? But So the other guy should be grateful for $50 million loan, but it's not shocking that he's willing to hear your request. But let's say when one of those posh executive, millionaires steps outside and there's a homeless guy sleeping in a bag on the street, and he says, "Oh, a minute, what about this guy? I just helped him with a $50 million loan. What's this guy's story?" And he goes over and he wants to hear, and he says, "You know, I'm going to get you on your feet. I'm going to give you a loan so you can start a business." So here, he might have given him only $10,000. But this guy's going to be even more grateful because of the very fact that you're taking an interest in me is like mind-boggling. This is our feeling toward Hashem. On top of everything he's doing for us, it's compounded by the fact that Hashem is taking an interest in us and telling us, "You're the ones I want close to me." That itself is mind-boggling.
So, but he created the whole world. Why wouldn't he be taking an interest in everything he created? Like, why would he even create things he's not going to take an interest in?
Why did he create things that he wouldn't take an interest? So the answer here is twofold. Hashem takes an interest in everything. Rachamav al kol ma'asav. His compassion is on everything he created. Yet Hashem created the whole existence in order to give. And you know what? For his reasons, he didn't just decide to give in a uniform way. He gives on many layers. He gives the flea the chesed of a 2-day life. A 2-day life, I think that's how long they live. I think that there's those tiny fleas, about 48 hours. Right, and a little bit of patience and they go away. But if that's to my understanding, it's a 2-day life with kidneys, with working systems, with food. That's chesed. And there's more chesed. There are insects that live for a week. That's chesed. Okay. And then there's the dog. My understanding is that a 20-year-old dog is already called a very senior citizen. So he gets 20 years of life with food, with a working heart. That's also chesed. Elephants, I think they can live for like 50, 60 years. And they get a lot of brush that they can eat. And then you have human beings, get a lot more chesed. Hashem staggered it. Hashem layered it. And then he has those for whom he kviyochel, he destined for them the highest levels of his chesed. And that is chesed that just goes on and on forever. And he gives it to them in the best possible way. He set it up such that you spend some time earning it, not a lot of time. And then, after you've earned it, you've earned your connection with him, and then you enjoy it for billions of years. So Hashem's interest is in everything, but there's more interest and more interest. You have a person who's very kind, but if he has an only child, you'll be kind to everybody in the community. But the primary attentions and energies are on his child. That is answer number one. But in addition to that, much of the world was really meant to form the basis for that chesed that he wanted to give his people. So we take all that in. And then we get to the question of the question, the very poignant question you raised earlier. You say, okay, you see this king who's showing you favor. He gives you this, and he gives you that. You know, that's meant to inspire in me a love toward that king, a sense of dedication to the king, etc. And then one day the king says, "All right, now I'm taking the car back." And okay, now I'm taking your job back. And then all of a sudden the person finds himself back to square one minus. And all of a sudden the king doesn't seem interested in him. What happens now? So here is where we get to the more subtle part. But this is how the Chovos HaLevavos and others from also lay it down. I think that the Tanya talks about this at length. And that is that we're meant to be in a place where we see everything that Hashem is doing for us, and we take in from that his attentions for us. Until we really understand the very, very tight bond between Hashem and us. And once we're able to do that, Hashem says, now can we take it to the next level? And I want to test our bond. I want to test our bond. Because the truth is that the things that we have in life, let's say everything from food to working eyes, etc., are meant to be kind of like signals of Hashem's relationship with you. But once you actually connect to him, we're meant to understand that his relationship with us goes way beyond all those things. And therefore, he may say at some point, okay, now I want to take our relationship further. And I'm going to take it to levels that are beyond the material things that I gave you. Because really, our relationship is at a much deeper level and at a much more profound level and at a level that really transcends everything material. So I want to see if we can take it to that level. And that is where, again, we're talking about things that are above my head. I'm just saying it. I'm just saying the words. But where people can then find even more closeness with Hashem, with the understanding that he is actually providing means of enhancing the relationship by making you struggle for it. And with the understanding that at the end of the day, his attentions never go away. Because all the material ingredients of his relationship with you, all the material things that he gives you, are only the trappings. Only the trappings. It's not really what it's about. And his attention for you and his investment in your good is axiomatic. That is not changing. Once you've sensed that through the material things he did for you, you're meant to connect to the core of it. And I'll just realize that now it's not about those material things per se. It's about the billion-year relationship that I have with him. And anything that might be happening in this short little stint that we call life is really just about the broader relationship. Really just about the broader relationship. Not simple, but this is how Hashem sets it up with us.
So that makes sense if you grow up and you have time to develop this wonderful relationship, and then you hit bumps in the road, and then you can say, oh, but see, I worked so hard and I can see all he's done. What if he throws them at a young child? Like, and he does, you know? Like, how's a kid supposed to cope with that? Like, I don't know. Like, these are tough questions, but they have to be asked because otherwise it's just a nice fairy tale.
These are tough questions, and they should be asked. These are tough questions, they should be asked. At the end of the day, the Chovas HaLevavos tells us we shouldn't dare to propose an absolute answer. We shouldn't dare to do that. That would be presumptuous on our part. Both in terms of Ben Adam LaMakom and Ben Adam LaChaver, meaning it would be presumptuous toward Hashem, and it would also be disrespectful of the question to really say, here, I'm going to give you the answer. Now it's all worked out, right? All we can say is, not as an answer, but as something to work with, is that Hashem has a very individual path for every person, its own plan. And we don't know. We think in objective terms. What is good? What is opportunity? Et cetera, et cetera. But well, let me give a weak mashal, a weak mashal. Let's say I have a person who was born into a slum neighborhood, grew up surrounded by crime, and that's basically all this person was exposed to. Earning an honest living, he doesn't believe in burglary. That's like sneaky. Well, an honest living is mugging. You're straightforward, you're open, you're not hiding anything. Honest mugger. Okay? And this is basically how this person grew up. And that's it. Those were his role models. He had a grandfather who was a very famous mugger. He doesn't, he looks down on pickpockets. So, okay, and then this person grew up in a setting where ruthlessness is considered a chashav amida, right? Okay. And then I actually heard such a story. This was about a burglar. I actually heard such a story about a burglar who, this was a Jewish burglar here in Eretz Yisrael, and he broke into somebody's apartment, and this was an almana who was marrying off a daughter, and she had a lot of cash in the apartment that she had toward the wedding, and she caught him in the act. To say that he was an experienced guy. He wasn't he knew how to, he was trained in burglar school. He knew what you do if you caught him in the act. Whatever the case is, she caught him in the act and she told him, "I want you to know that that money that you want to take now," but she described her whole situation. She described her whole situation. He's listening to her. And finally, when she finished the whole story, he put the money back down and took out a checkbook and wrote out a check and gave it to her and ran away. Okay? This is a, supposedly a true story. Supposedly a true story. But I'm not going to go to that extent. I'm going to talk about the guy who all of his friends, once they mug the person, you knock the person out just for good measure. It's just a way of doing a manly job. Meaning you got the money already. But you give a good punch in the face, leave the person flat. That's how you finish the job in a neat way. Okay? Now this guy, he also had such an experience where he saw this was a helpless woman who looks totally frightened. Now, there is a chiyuv hishtadlus. He's not going to not take the money. He's going to take the money. There is a chiyuv hishtadlus. But he decides that, he looks at her and he feels that compassion and he says, not only is he not going to knock her out, but he is going to actually escort her, make sure she gets out safely out of the neighborhood. He gives her enough money just to take a taxi home. From her money, yes. Okay. So I'm illustrating a bit of an extreme case. But this guy who grew up in that situation, that might actually be considered a very great accomplishment, right? For a person who came from that kind of place. For me, it wouldn't be. Nobody would give me credit for leaving the woman money for the taxi home. Right? But for this person, it actually might be considered a chashuv accomplishment. Perhaps in Shamayim, they would tell him, this was the nisayon that was expected of you. It was beyond him, it was totally outside his frame of reference to do anything more than that. To not rob the woman. He has a responsibility towards his wife and his children, but he's not going to not rob the woman. But we don't know when Hashem puts a person into a situation, what is the shine that they can be coming up to Shemayim with? What for me and you might seem like a life of total dump, and it's just rotten from beginning to end, but we don't know where is the greatness in that life. It's totally subjective to that person's reality, and that person, in their own unique path, was actually bringing great nachas to Hashem, and perhaps even more than that. If that person, let's say, had people around them in their lives, inspiring them, etc., right? And that person never really amounted to much in the objective sense, but they had a few such victories, whether it's in the realm of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, in the realm of Midas, or different things that they overcame. And what do we know? Hashem might be saying, for this person with the package that I dealt them, that was actually a smashing success. And not only that, but a person that they had in their life who actually inspired it. Now you would look at it and say, oh, that person is a chash of a person. This person is a lowlife who got a little inspired here and there. In Shemayim, Hashem might say, you know what the value of that chash of a person is? I wanted this, so to speak, lowlife's victories. For me, that is actually one of the greatest accomplishments of the generation. And I put that chash of a person into his life because I wanted that accomplishment. So Hashem has his own very specific, unique package with each individual. Objectively, it might look like that person was not given any opportunity, but that's once again because we're looking at it in terms of objective opportunity.
But we were talking about feeling love for Hashem. So you're born into a slum, your mother's an addict, your father's in and out of jail all the time. You're a member of a gang, you grow up to become a mugger. So how do you feel love towards the Shem?
Not expected, it's not expected of that person unless they go through a whole different path. Meaning, their expectation is something else. This expectation that we're discussing here is for the person who was exposed to Chavis HaLevavos. Okay. That's who the expectation is for. And we have to appreciate that that's the place that Hashem put us in. Everybody is expected according to the package that Hashem dealt them. And for us, part of that package was Chavis HaLevavos. Okay, we began the subject, we addressed it inadequately, but that is what we have to say for today. A good Tevach.
Thank you very much.
Good to you.
Thank you.